market.
The S&P, the ASX stocks.
This is Motley Fool Money.
Welcome to Motley Fool Money, the podcast that is open to being bought out by Amazon, if only for a lazy few billion dollars. I'm Andrew Page, and with me, as always, is Scott Phillips.
G'day, Andrew. G'day, fools, and show me the money.
Today on the podcast, the Amazon juggernaut rolls on. This time it's buying US Whole Foods. Is there an Australian retailer also on the shopping list? And as if one bank levy wasn't enough, the SA government unveils its own. What does that mean? And also, what if you could buy a house but on the stock market? We're going to take a look at a facility that allows you to do just that. And saddle up, we're getting on our high horse. Mr. Phillips is going to give us a little bit of a rant. But first, Scott.
Yes.
Amazon, you know, I feel as though we've talked about this every other week.
We almost have.
But it keeps giving us stuff to talk about. So
as our colleagues in the US, the news would say the news fairy has arrived.
The news fairy has arrived. So Amazon, we all know who Amazon is. Sorry. There's the $18 billion deal. That's in Australian dollars, $13.7 billion US. They are buying out Whole Foods. Now, for those that don't know, Whole Foods is a US grocery retailer, an upmarket retailer, it should be said. A few hundred stores around North America. We've been in one before, Scott.
We have.
In Alexandria. And man, are they really cool.
Virginia, we should say, not Alexandria, Sydney.
Yes, very good point. It's not in Australia yet.
No, that's right.
Much to the delight, I would suggest, of Coles and Woolies. So it's a huge deal. It's been all over the business papers. We thought we had to talk about this because Amazon has come up a lot, but it's always in the context of online retailing. You know, what's that going to mean for the local industry, how it's disrupting things there. But this is almost, you know, a step back in a sense, because they're buying the bricks and mortar, the very thing that they were out to disrupt. And they're getting also more heavily involved, of course, into that grocery chain. So give us the rationale, if you can, Mr. Phillips.
Well, we don't yet really know. And I guess that's the interesting thing about it is Amazon and Whole Foods did a deal apparently over only 6 weeks. They kind of got together. John Mackey, the CEO, who we should say for full disclosure is also a director of The Motley Fool. John Mackey met with Jeff Bezos, the CEO of Amazon, apparently for a couple of hours. It lasted about 10 hours. And they kind of kept talking
It's a real bromance from what I understand.
Yeah. And in fact, Mackey actually talks about it as an engagement and the whole lot. So it's the analogies and metaphors run
very
thick and fast.
Yeah.
No one really knows exactly. The key thoughts are a couple of things. Firstly, Amazon's working on its own supermarket called Amazon Go.
Yes.
And it's a checkout chick-less supermarket. Everything's done with cameras and computer chips.
You basically pick it off the shelf or out of the fridge and just walk out.
So it's already doing that.
It knows what you've done.
It's already trying to get into some sort of physical retail with bookstores.
Yes.
And the questions or the concerns, the thoughts are, what does Whole Foods give it? Now, it gives it a few hundred pick up and drop off locations around the country.
Yes.
It gives it an avenue for its grocery business.
Yes.
It gives us access to, frankly, you know, effectively delivery depots it didn't have before. And so if you think about what Amazon's trying to do as it moves further and further into broader, not even retail, but it owns its own fleet of planes. It owns its own warehouses. This business is trying to disrupt the entire supply chain of purchases. I was going to even say groceries. It's not even just groceries. It's everything, you know. Yeah. So as Amazon grows, buying Whole Foods gives it a whole lot of different things, gives it a whole lot of customer data, gives it a whole lot of opportunity around purchasing, around retailing, around that sort of stuff. And then as it goes international, you know, it gives it a model and a footprint that it possibly can roll out when it arrives here as well.
I know Amazon's had a bit of trouble early days still, but getting into that online grocery space, groceries are a different kettle of fish to a lot of other things that are in retail. I mean, things perish. Is the main thing.
Right.
Obviously, the fruit and veg doesn't last that long. It doesn't always ship that well. For the record, we do a lot of it here. We use Coles and Woolies quite a lot to do our online shopping, and we love it. But in the US, it's about 2% of all grocery trade goes through online. So it's been a very tough nut to crack there. And is that a bit of an acknowledgement that, look, you know, there is always going to be a need for a physical presence. This is the way that we get into it very quickly. And giving us those other benefits you mentioned?
I think so possible. I think if you think about Amazon, people talk about it as a tech company. I mentioned this to you this morning before we walked in the studio. I reckon we're missing a trick if we talk about Amazon as a tech company. Yes, it's made its name, it's made its business online, doing all those really good things. The membership model, Amazon Prime, we've talked about before. It's done a great job being online. But what if Jeff Bezos and Amazon is actually just about retail more broadly, wherever, whenever the customer is.
Yeah.
If it's online, great. If it's physical stores, great. If you think about it in a new way and say, What if Jeff Bezos is just saying, how can I get as many customer dollars as I can wherever the customer chooses to shop?
Yeah.
Now I have the scale, the size, the know-how to basically, you know, why do we think Amazon is just an online retailer that might do some other things?
Mm. Well, technology is an enabler for them. It allows them to do what they want to do and improve the customer experience, increase their efficiencies and the rest of it. But yeah, first and foremost, a retail. I'd agree with that.
I wouldn't be at all surprised to see Amazon do a much, much, much bigger amount of business offline, or at least in some sort of omni-channel way that we talk about in the future. And frankly, as it arrives in Australia, that opens the question of, does it want to buy a Woolies or a Metcalfe?
Well, here's the funny thing. So when the deal was announced, all the listed grocers over in the US all plunged, you know, quite significantly.
And reasonably so too.
You know, and then in the next day, so did Wesfarmers and Woolies here as well. So again,
Wesfarmers owns Coles, of course.
Yes, that's correct. And so the question is, well, if this is a model that they might prosecute here and just buy out one of these big guys, then surely why would shares go down here?
Because maybe they don't.
Yeah, right.
And or maybe they buy one and not the other. And frankly, if you got both or one or the other, you think, well, geez, I'm not sure I want to pay as much for Woolies and Wesfarmers as I used to.
Yeah.
Maybe Amazon brings Whole Foods here. Maybe it buys Metcash. Maybe it buys Woolies, but not Wesfarmers or vice versa. Mm. If there is a loser from Amazon being in the grocery space. When people said Amazon's coming to Australia, the JBs, the Harvey Normans got hurt because they figured, well, they're going to do Amazon type stuff. If all of a sudden Amazon in the grocery business, well, you don't want to be holding Woolies and Wesfarmers shares, or at least you want to be a little bit mindful of what might happen.
It's an interesting space, and this will no doubt not be the last that we talk about it. So we'll come back and keep our finger on the pulse, as they say.
Interesting. Let's talk about bank taxes. Of
interest. Nice segue.
Motley Fool Money. Financial advice for real people, not trust fund hippies. Sign up for the newsletter at fool.com.au/MMM.
Bank tax. So when the federal government, Mr. Morrison, handed down the federal budget.
Treasurer Morrison.
That's exactly what I was going to say. they announced this bank levy. So 0.15% of all the liabilities of the banks, looking to raise, what, $6 billion over 4 years or so?
Yeah, we should say 0.015 per quarter. So 0.06 year is the number.
Yep, absolutely right. We talked about that before, but what is interesting and what is new is that the South Australian government has come out and said, hey, actually, that's a really great idea. We're going to do the same. So for them, it's going to raise, they reckon, around about $370 million.
Yep.
Billion would be nice. $1 million over 4 years. What do you make of this? It's not a huge, I mean, it's not, banks aren't going to welcome it. It's not a huge sum of money for them collectively.
Paul Keating is he has some enemies and some friends, but he's ever quotable. And Paul Keating famously said, "Never stand between a premier and a bucket of money." And if you think about that, Scott Morrison has put this bank tax in place,
right?
And the South Australian Treasurer, the South Australian Premier, have gone, "Hey, you know what?
That's a good idea.
No one really minded that. Yeah. That was actually okay. They got away with that. No one was hurt. What if we could do it too?"
And it's really that question of why did they do it? Well, because they can, I guess.
Exactly. Well, which is taxation generally, right? Yeah, so, look, the basic reality is South Australia's government has a fiscal problem. Like most governments around the world, and certainly around Australia, they've got a problem with, you know, spending and taxation. Now, we can get in the ideological discussion about whether you should cut spending or whether you increase taxes, but let's put that aside just for a second. If you're going to go and raise more money to balance the budget, where do you go? If you take it off people who can least afford to pay it back, so you cut welfare or you tax low-income earners, that money comes straight out of the economy. The money I would have spent buying bread or milk or a movie or a pizza, that comes straight out of the economy, and it's harder for the economy to grow. Mm-hmm. If on the other hand you say, I need $370 million, if I get it from the banks, then it's probably not going to hurt that much. Now, it's money that does come out of the economy, and there's a whole lot of bank shareholders listening to us yelling at their choice of podcast app right now saying, you bastards, it hurts my money, and it does. But the reality is, as an economy, and this is probably unpalatable for those who own bank shares, the bank shareholders are going to have a lower impact on the broader economy if they don't spend that dividend versus the person who otherwise might be slugged with an increase in tax. So if you're going to raise taxes as a government, you want to raise it from the place that can most afford to pay that tax and has the least effect on the physical
economy.
The least
blowback for you politically as
well. Well, yeah, that's right. So economically and politically, banks are an easy target.
So as I said, perhaps a little too flippantly, it's not a huge sum of money in the grand scheme of things. And that's obviously from a given perspective.
Yeah, that's true.
But what this news, I guess, has sort of highlighted is, holy shit, does that mean that the other states are going to do that too? I mean, if the feds have done it and now South Australia's done it, you've got to wonder if Perth's sort of looking at that going, well, maybe we should do this too, and, you know, Victoria, et cetera. So essentially, it could, in effect, double what that federal tax was going to levy.
And that was the Bankers Union, or the Bankers Association, we're supposed to call it. The Bankers Union got out very quickly and said, you know, we're calling on all state premiers to rule out doing that in their states as well.
Rule out. Rule in, rule out.
That's love what it's all about, right? Yeah. So if they can get the premiers of some of the bigger states to say, no, we're not going to do it here. They'll feel much better about that. They're trying to get on the front foot now. They're in serious damage control. And to your point, Andrew, there is every possibility that the other state governments say, well, the feds have done it. Mm. South Australia's done it. And also, talking politically for a second, there's a coalition conservative federal government. There's a Labor state South Australian government. So across party lines, no one's going to say, well, those Labor bastards or those Liberal bastards are doing X, Y, or Z, because they're both doing it, right? So if you're a state premier, again, that bucket of money thing that Paul Keating talked about, I got to reckon you're looking at that going, well, I could say no, and I could take a principled stand, but if I don't, there's a few hundred million dollars that I can pick up on the cheap pretty quickly from those banks, and I wouldn't at all be, I don't expect it, frankly, but nor am I particularly surprised if they do it.
Now, you and I are both on the record as being a little bit bearish on the banks. Yes, and sir. I guess just to put some context around that, it's not anything we're going to start shorting anytime soon or would encourage people to sell. It's just that, you know, it doesn't appear to us as a highly compelling opportunity, which is something you've got to say a bit carefully because they've been such wonderful wealth creators over the long term for many, many, many people.
Yep.
But this is just another problem on top of all the other sort of issues that they're sort of facing at the moment. So does this change your mind in regards to that?
No, this is the thing I have to say. And look, there's a whole lot of moving parts here. Aside from whether they should do it, the public policy question, all the rest of that stuff, the money the feds were charging is going to cost banks about 5% of their profits a year. Mm. Now, if all the other states keep going, then it goes from 5 to 10% at worst. Mm. And that's not small, right, by the way.
No.
But it also doesn't necessarily undermine. If you're bullish on the banks, then you've got to dial back your expectations a little bit.
Yeah.
If you're bearish on the banks, then maybe your expectations get worse by a little bit.
Yeah.
But these are small amounts. They are percentages of profit that will come and go as we go. Whatever view you have on the banks, if you think they'll do well, they're not going to do badly because of this tax.
Yeah.
And if you already think they're going to do badly, this tax isn't going to make it that much worse. But frankly, it makes any downside more likely. Mm. This is a small portion across the top of whatever you expect. If you're a bank bear, then fine. If you're a bank bull, then fine. Mm. This is not going to change your view or shouldn't change your view one way or the other. It may, though, by the way, just put a small dampener on bank share prices because if future profits are 5% less than they would have otherwise been, then you should pay 5% less for the shares.
Rationally, that's exactly how it should be.
But it won't destroy banks as an investment. It won't make them a great investment. It's a shaving on the edges, and that's exactly what the pollies are expecting.
Yep, okay.
Motley Fool Money. For more, go to fool.com.au/MMM.
Well, let's go from banks to bricks.
Yes.
And we mentioned at the top of the podcast that what if you could buy a property on the share market? Now, well,
you kind of can
in a way. We have these things called REITs, Real Estate Investment Trusts, REIT.
It used to be called a property trust until the Yanks decided to call them REITs, and then we had to slavishly adopt the same
term. Mate, if there's one industry that loves a good acronym, it's ours.
God help us. And, we even call them A-REITs, right? Because they're Australian Real Estate Investment Trust. Like, we don't call it the A-retail sector or the A-banking sector. But the bloody...
And LPTs is the other one. Anyway,
the property trust,
we digress. We digress. So you can already do that.
Isn't that what we do as a podcast?
Digress?
It's kind of the digression to be a two-minute podcast once a fortnight.
So you can already do it in the sense of these instruments that are out there. They're typically, though, in fact, in almost all cases, in every case, as far as I know, they are commercial-type properties.
Yeah. Of one sort or another, warehouses or retail stores or whatever, but effectively.
Yeah, but now we're talking about actual house, like residential houses, you know, the suburban house, the suburban unit, this kind of thing. There's a new relatively new outfit called Brick X.
And I see what they did there.
They're proposing to do exactly that. So they go out there, they buy a property, they chop that up into 10,000 individual bits or shares, if you will. They call them bricks, funnily enough. And you can buy them and you can trade them. And
never get between a marketer and a financial product.
I had someone contact me throughout the week and saying, I heard about this. It sounds really interesting. What do you guys think? I'll ask you first before giving my thoughts. What do you reckon, mate?
Oh, dear. Look, I know what you'll say, so I'm gonna give the bear case and you can give the bull case and we'll meet somewhere in the middle.
Right.
I don't think that Australians need any more incentive to speculate on the share on the price of housing. We've already got this massively overvalued housing market in Australia, particularly in the eastern seaboard, Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane, roughly in that proportion, in that order. You can invest in properties already as it is. I don't know that. There's nothing inherently evil or terrible about it, but geez, we don't need another bloody reason to speculate on house prices, surely.
There's what something is, and then there's how people use it. People could very much level that charge at us and say, we would say the share market is a wonderful, in fact, prudent, sensible, and over the long term, low risk approach to build wealth. I think you'd say that. I know you quite well.
I'm sure you would say that. A diversified.
Yes.
Range of Chevron.
Totally. So it's how you skin the cat. Now the bloke who comes up and starts, you know, betting his life savings on one penny dreadful gold stock is doing something stupid and highly reckless, and they're probably going to get, you know, taken to the cleaner as a result of that. It doesn't mean that the share market's this amoral, silly thing that you should get involved in. I guess that's where I come down in terms of BrickX. I actually love the concept.
I didn't say it was amoral, but keep going.
Look, it's this ability. Here are the advantages. If I go and buy an investment property today,
yes,
I need to save up a bucket load of cash for the deposit. I have to take on a huge amount of debt.
We just borrow 95% of it.
Exactly. you know, and it's all in that, you know, the proverbial one basket. This allows me to diversify. I can buy as, I only need a few thousand, I think, if that, with these guys. So I could buy a range of different properties. So I can diversify. It's far more liquid. So if I need some money, I don't, you know, you can't, if you've got an investment property, you can't just sell the kitchen or the bathroom. You sell the whole lot and the rest of it. So I think in terms of being able to get exposure to an asset class, giving me the benefits of diversification, giving me added liquidity are all very good things. Of course, like anything, there are fees attached and you need to look at it and decide whether that is onerous and compare that to what other alternatives that are out there. And I also think, as with any investment, you've got to look at it on the merits. So there might, people listening to this regularly will know that I've got a certain view on the property market and how fairly valued or otherwise that might be. Again, it doesn't mean that the someone who's giving you the mechanism to participate that in a new way, you know, that's a bad mechanism. But
so guns don't kill people, people kill people. Is that what you're saying?
I think that's... Jeez, gotta be careful. I don't think that's a terrible way of putting it. I think that if you want to buy, if
drugs
you,
don't kill people, people
if you
kill
don't
people.
Have a few, you know, 100,000
nuclear weapons don't kill people, people kill people.
Dollars around, you know, to buy a property, you want to get exposure, you want to put a little bit in, you want to diversify. I think it's a great way of doing it. Just remember that at the end of the day, behind all of these sort of financial products, there is a real asset, and you need to have a good view on that asset and a good view of value. And for my money, I think in concept, it's a good idea.
As much as I desperately do love giving you shit, Andrew, I find myself struggling to disagree too much. I think, like anything, it's how these instruments are used.
Yes,
I think you need to be very, very careful. You mentioned fees.
Yes.
I think any market, any product that's created, particularly what they call structured products. So if someone says, hey, we've created this thing for you to buy, there's every chance they're trying to do it to make money on the fees they're charging you. They're not making a market out of their own.
Sure, exactly, they're not a charity. Yeah, I get that.
And so I would be a little bit careful there. And I think to your point, as part of a diversified portfolio, for those who would otherwise buy a property trust, I'm not going to call it REITs because I refuse. Anyone who would buy a property trust as part of their share portfolio, there's no reason you can't add a BrickX type exposure to residential property if you so choose, if you believe the investment is worth making.
Yeah, approach it with all the usual investment criteria.
Don't
use it to punt on. Don't speak. I mean, that's just a road to ruin. So that, I guess that's the point.
Real money advice from real people. Not just a couple of dicks with a Porsche. Get more at fool.com.au/MMM.
Speaking of bad investments.
Hey, hey.
I'm getting my whole, hang on.
We
need a sound effect, dude. I'm not doing it justice here. I'm going to... The coconuts from Monty Python.
That's right.
I'm up my high horse. Here we go, up here on top of the stallion.
What are you going to rant on?
Silver. I'm on top. No, I'm not spraying about silver. I'm on top of silver. Okay. Lone Ranger thing. Anyway, let's move on. Options.
Tell me, what is an option?
An option is a terrible investment product created by some bastard who wants to steal your money and make you feel smart.
Tell me more.
So what an option is, an option, we'll call them derivatives generally, right? Because the value is derived from something else. If you, the options start in a wonderful place. If you wanted to sell your wheat to a buyer, you didn't know what was going to happen. You know how much you were going to get for your wheat. So you didn't know how much you could afford to plant or how much the water or fertilizer or farming would cost. So what you do is you make a deal with a bloke. Because look, if you take my entire field of wheat, give me a guaranteed price, then I can decide whether or not I want to plant the wheat in the first place.
Yep.
If I know I'm getting, and let me make up a horrible number here, $10 a bushel for my wheat. If I can afford to do that and get $10 to make a profit, I'll plant the field.
We both get a bit of certainty, both
right. You know what you're going to, you know how much you're going to buy. You know what you're going to charge for. You're going to make it into cornflakes or Weet-Bix or something else. You're going to make wheat into cornflakes because that's corn. But if you're making it into Weet-Bix, for example, you know how much you're getting. You know how much you're going to cost you. You can afford to pay that. You get certainty of volume and price. I get certainty of volume and price. Everyone's happy.
It's a wonderful financial.
It's
invention.
Called a future. It's a fantastic idea.
It's
right?
Great.
And then those bastards in the financial services industry, like us, they're not the bastard types, make this horrible product out of this stuff, right? It's legalized betting. It's respectable betting. Okay, so think about the GFC. The GFC was made by people who made these mortgages into packages, right? They packaged them all up into tranches and said, here's 1,000 mortgages. You can buy these. Now, individually, they're crap. But altogether, if I do some magic, I can pretend there's 1,000 of them. Therefore, it's diversified. Therefore, they go from some horrible C-grade rubbish to this AAA-rated high-quality stuff, right? That's bad enough. Then these other blokes say, I want to bet on whether those go up or down. So I'm going to make a naked derivative on this stuff. And the value of those options were 10, 15, 20 times the value of the underlying mortgages. There was 20 times as much money betting on the outcome as actually was being repaid. Now, take that to the broader market. There's options on the index. There's options on whether the prices go up or down today, tomorrow, next week. There's options on options square. There's naked options, which means you're just literally betting.
Yep.
You go to the track and you say, I'll bet on horse number one winning. We call that betting.
Yeah.
You go to the ASX and you bet on the BHP share price going up by next year, and we somehow call it investing. It is absolutely madness. Markets are there to facilitate the flow of capital, not as betting mechanisms, just created to make some people happy and to make those people money. This is the thing.
Well,
the options traders, it's a zero sum. If you invest in shares, right? You sell me your woolly shares. If they go up, you don't lose money. I don't lose money. You could have made more money maybe if you didn't, but it's not a zero-sum game.
It's not zero-sum.
In options, I'm betting against you. I'm saying to you, if it goes up, you owe me money.
Yeah.
If it goes down, I owe you money.
Aggregate losses equals aggregate gains.
And you know who makes the money? The people who are facilitating the trades.
Yeah.
It's activity created for fee provision, not for actually helping anyone become more wealthy. Or what markets? The stock market is designed to facilitate the flow of capital.
Okay. Jeez. Whoa, Silver. Whoa. Easy on here. I would say, I agree with a lot of that. And that, I think that is very much how it has, these instruments have tended to be used.
It is a pox.
I would say though, it depends on how you use it. You know, we're all big boys, we're big boys and girls. We're adults. We can do what we like. You know, we don't need someone saying yes, you can and you can't do that. If someone wants to go out there and bet on that stuff, you're allowed to bet on the horses. You're allowed to bet on the footy. You know, so again, I don't necessarily agree with it or think it's a sound financial thing to do. But you know, who am I to say that you can't do it? So that'd be the first point I'd make, just for disagreeing. And secondly, I think it again is how you use it. Now, they're not for me either. But there's plenty of people out there who would say they would use it for very prudent reasons. They can use it to manage their losses. They can use it to gain a little bit of extra income. There is no free lunch in investing, so there are risks with everything you do. But along the spectrum of options, there's the super, super, super high risk, you know, lose your shirt type stuff. And there's the other, well, worst case scenario isn't too bad, and I can pay maybe, you know, augment my returns a little bit over time. So surely there's a grey area in there where it's not as bad as you're making out.
No.
Not going to come across.
There is flatly no. This is the problem. Right? You make a very, the one very valid point is these products, you know, should someone ban them just because they can be used badly? You can have that argument. Guns, nuclear weapons, drugs. There's a whole ideological discussion we could do for 15 hours over a million beers at the pub. I'm not going to go down that path. What I am saying is these things are sold mostly to people who are unsophisticated investors, by savvy marketing, by people who say, oh, you're a smart bloke, Andrew. I'll tell you what, you know what's going to happen on the market. Let me take your money when you can bet on what's going to happen.
Yeah.
The incitement to gamble.
Yeah.
Call it gambling. Do it at the CAB. That's fine.
Yeah.
Don't pretend that just because you do it through a stockbroker or through some bloke in a suit at the top of an ivory tower in the middle of Sydney or Melbourne or Brisbane, that just because that happens, there's somehow this cloak of respectability over it.
Yeah.
Call it punting. Yeah. Get in the TAB, call up your bookmaker and say, did I want to go and spend $20 betting on the movement of Market X? That's fine. Yeah. Let's do that. I have no problem with that at all. If you call it gambling and regulate it accordingly, fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
When you pretend it's investing, when it's sold by otherwise respectable people, cloaked in some sort of risk management, bet on, you know what's happening in the markets, use your expertise. It's psychological manipulation writ large, and it costs a shitload of people a shitload of money. And frankly, it should be much more restricted or not made available through the ASX.
I think that's a fair point. And listeners, you will see various ads around various brokers for these kinds of things. They will very much highlight all the positive side of these, but they don't often go into the risks. And in some cases, the risks can be very, very substantial. So just bear all of that in mind if you are so inclined to go down that path.
And then don't.
And remember as well, these are assets that just after a certain point in time become worthless. They have an expiry date. After that, they are gone. And you know, not only do you need to have a particular view on the asset, but you need to get the timing extraordinarily right. There's all kinds of things like time decay and a whole bunch of nerdy stuff we won't get into.
Which no one bothers to understand.
Beware.
And the people who sell it don't tell you about this stuff.
Yeah.
It's been likened to picking up pennies in front of steamrollers. It's exactly what it's like.
Yeah.
Maybe you make a little bit of money along the way. But I'll tell you what, if you trip up, the steamroller goes straight over the top of you.
All right, mate. Let's call it a day at that. I'm putting a put option on this discussion. Remember, if you do like what we're doing here, we hope you do, please subscribe. You can do that through iTunes or your chosen Android podcast
app. Give us 5 stars just because it makes me feel better after this rant.
Don't ask, don't receive, hey?
Just do me a favor. Just do me a favor. Give me those 5 stars just because you want to help my blood pressure. That would do immense business for me, for my doctor, for my wife. It'll make my life a whole lot better.
I'll go with that. Thank you for your time again, Scott.
Thank you, Andrew. Thank you, fools.
And until next time, fool on.
Fool on.
The Motley Fool and people appearing in this program may have positions in the companies mentioned. General advice only. Please speak to your financial professional to understand how it may pertain to your situation. Subscribe to the free newsletter at fool.com.au/MMM. The Motley Fool operates under Financial Services License 400691.